This is the gospel reading. Jesus said to his disciples, "Beware of practicing your piety before others in order to be seen by them. For then you have no reward from your Father in heaven. So whenever you give alms, do not sound a trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, so that they may be praised by others. Truly I tell you, they have received their reward. But when you give alms, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your alms may be done in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you. And whenever you pray, do not be like the hypocrites, for they love to stand and pray in the synagogues and at the street corners, so that they may be seen by others. Truly, I tell you, they have received their reward. But whenever you pray, go into the room and shut the door and pray to your Father who is in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you. And whenever you fast, do not look dismal like the hypocrites, for they disfigure their faces so as to show others that they are fasting. Truly, I tell you, they have received their reward. But when you fast, put oil on your head and wash your face, so that your fasting may be seen not by others, but by your Father who is in secret. And your Father who sees in secret will reward you. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust consume and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust consumes and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will also be." The word of the Lord. So my name is Rob Stewart. I am the executive director of New Horizons, which is a program that serves youth and young adults that experience homelessness here in King County. And we offer shelter, we offer housing support, we do employment work. We also run a social enterprise that we call Street Bean. And honestly, we do it all because our community comes alongside of us to do it. And I have been incredibly blessed to get to know people here in this congregation that have come and supported and helped us love youth and ask really interesting questions. And I'm really grateful to be here, grateful to share. I'm happy to answer any questions about New Horizons. I did answer 43,000 questions in forum about the nature of homelessness and sort of the political landscape. Not my sweet spot, but I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have and help kind of understand what we do. But today, I'm here to talk about the gospel passage. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to focus really on the last part where it says, you know, do not store up your things on this earth. And this is my bad paraphrase, but store up things in heaven, you know, because things on this earth, they get consumed and lost and they're transient, but store things that would be lasting in heaven. I'm going to talk about that. You have to know this about me. When I was 26, because this passage reminds me of that. When I was 26, I was living in Los Angeles, and I was going to seminary. And this was about one of my first times in a major city, and so I was just intoxicated by the city. And I was living on about $19,000 a year in Pasadena, California. And I rented an apartment by myself. That's not a lot of money. Pasadena is an exceedingly expensive place, but I'll tell you what, it was sufficient. Like, it worked for me. I was able to go on dates, and I was able to go to really cool coffee shops, Starbucks, which you don't have those here, but in LA you have them. And I would go out to eat, and we would go to movies, and I felt like my life was pretty good. I did have a car that never got out of second gear, but that was just part of being me at that point. I went side streets everywhere. But it felt sufficient. It felt like it worked. I was at a really good point in my life. I actually say it's one of the best points of my life. It also happened to be the time that literally for the first time in my life, I started to think about and learn about and hear about the ethics of Jesus. I grew up as an evangelical, and we certainly talked a lot about the cross. We sang really good songs. We focused a lot on things like the Gospel of John. But when it came to talking about the kingdom of God and the ethics of Jesus, I just didn't talk about it. It had never really occurred to me that Jesus was trying to live fundamentally different than me, white guy from Indiana. Like, I had never really thought about that. I never really thought that he was trying to do something different with his life, to model something. And so when I got this information about this countercultural Jesus, I was blown away. It was like my whole world opened up. I had never thought about faith in that way or about how to be in the world that way. So I started to talk a lot about what it actually meant to be a Christian, what it meant to be someone who's living in these revolutionary ways. And at the time, the major thrust of all of the conversations that happened at seminary happened to be around environmentalism. Christians at that time had never thought that maybe we should care about the environment. And it was a big point of conversation. We also talked about politics. And I remember for the first time, that was the first time I ever thought, you could actually be a Christian and vote Democrat. I remember hearing that and believing it to my core. This was all so new. And then we talked about money. The disparity of wealth was one of the biggest conversations by my ethics professor, by all of the teachers that I was working with. It just happened to be at the core of what we talked about, money and how much you should have and what you should do with it and who should have it and who shouldn't. We talked about all of these things. So I was 26, living in Los Angeles on $18,000 a year, $19,000 a year, and I was studying the ethics of Jesus and focusing on the disparity between wealth. What do you think happened to me? Shout it out. This is better if you give answers. What do you think happened? Got angry? What? Yeah, I got scorned. I was angry. You know what really happened? Worse. I became an idealist. Like the greatest idealist of all times. I had certitude on every ethical issue under the sun. I was 26. I was living below the poverty line. I felt like I was living in the way of Jesus in these unique ways. And every ethical complex thing I could reduce down to some axiom, and I could tell you exactly where you should fall, where I fall, and where the world should fall on all of these complex things, from inclusion to politics to environments and certainly to money. I could tell you when you had too much. It felt like there was clear lines around this. I mean, some millennials in this room are thinking, I thought I invented, like, intellectual angst. No. I was doing this before you were born, right? And I did it really well. It was perfected because I had essentially no life experience. It just was largely unchecked. But I lived in that space. Now, I am not 26. Today is my 41st birthday. Yeah, I know. It's my 41st birthday today. I live in Finney Ridge. I would say I've got a nice house. My wife, she drives a nice car. I don't. That's something I have to take up with her all the time. We have a daughter. I spend way too much money on things like wine and going out to eat and paying ridiculous things. I do this all of the time. And it's interesting. I sometimes think if there was a cosmic twist, somehow that the world shifted and I could meet old me and old me could meet new me, we would hate each other. We wouldn't like each other. It would be contentious in many, many ways. Old me would look at new me and say, "You sold out, dude. You sold out. I can't, all of the things that you believed and all of the things that you thought you would do and things that you were certain on, now you're living in Finney Ridge and you're, you know, spending tons of money on food, going out to swanky restaurants. What's up with you? You hated people like that, and now you're that person. You've eaten the hegemonic apple. That's what you've done. And new me would look at old me and say, I had no idea how stupid you were. I had no idea that you'd actually never lived. You didn't bring a daughter into the world at that point. Your dad hadn't passed away yet. You hadn't had to deal with just like the weight of like the day-to-day obligation of being a father and a husband and trying to make it work. You never had to actually think about what it would want and what it would be to want something good for someone else other than yourself. And want to be in a neighborhood that was safe with good education. You never thought, you didn't know. The truth is that I miss old me. Life was easy. I was never all that unclear. I was pretty darn clear on what was right and who was wrong, who was in, who was out, who got it, and who didn't. I was really, really clear on those things. And I could come up with simple conclusions about complex things on the spot. And I could do it. I could have certainly handled this passage better than I'm going to today. I could have told you where hoarding begins. How many cars can you have? How big can your house be? How much money can you have in your bank account in comparison to people who have no money in their bank account? I could have come up with some stupid equation. I would have made sense of this fast. But now it's like life just makes it that you can't look at this in any way other than saying it's really complex. It's incredibly complex to define, like, what does it mean to save and to store and to be present in this earth and yet not so moored that you're stuck? Like, how do you do that? It's really, really, really complex. The thing that I think helps in decoding this is to recognize that Jesus didn't make this up. It's not like he was on the spot and thought, you know what, y'all need to stop storing things in treasure chests, and you need to start doing it like this. This is not something that is unique to Jesus. This is borrowing from human tradition. Basically, every religious and moral teacher from the beginning of time has taught something very similar to this. Something along the lines of, you can lose yourself. You can. You can lose very important, fully human parts of yourself. You just can if you're not careful. You can become consumed. Be aware of that. And Jesus is borrowing from this tradition. I mean, you can hear sort of coming out from these passages. It's like an echo. And I think we often hear it as an indictment. I think we often hear it as shame. I actually think it's a compassionate whisper that comes out of this, where Jesus is saying, be careful. We know this is true of humanity and has been true of humanity since the beginning of time. You will sell bits and pieces of yourself, and pretty soon you will be consumed. And things that you never thought you could have will become indispensable to your life, and they will make you stuck in some ways. Careful, careful. He's warning us, but in a compassionate tone. And I actually see Jesus is really mirroring all of the wisdom around money and stuff that exists in the Old Testament. I think a great place to look is the wisdom tradition and to look at Solomon. Solomon was a guy that had enormous amounts of wealth. He was supposedly the wisest person of all time, and he did so many beautiful and powerful things. He also did some terrible things. But he was a person whose whole life had been fundamentally curated for himself. It had been given to him, and he leveraged wealth to become richer and more powerful. He had it all. And so the book of Ecclesiastes is sort of like his swan song. He's sort of sitting back, man, all of these years, this is what happened. I want to reflect on how I understand it now. And this is what he says, and this is my paraphrase. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem, vanity of vanities, says the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What does man gain by all the toil at which he toils under the sun? I, the preacher, have been king over Israel and Jerusalem, and I applied my mind to seek and to search out by wisdom all that is done under heaven. And it's just unhappy business. that God has given to the sons of men to be busy with. I've seen everything that is done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and a striving after wind. I made great works. I built houses and planted vineyards for myself. I made myself gardens and parks and planted them in all kinds of fruit trees. I made myself pools from which to water the forest of growing trees. I hated all my toil in which I had toiled under the sun, seeing that I must leave it to the man who will come after me, and who knows whether he will be wise with it or not. And this is Solomon, the richest man, the wisest man. This is his reflection on his life. And I think it's easy to look at this like we often do in sort of American church and say, see, wealth is bad. See what happens? Using Solomon as a test case. The problem is that I think it oversimplifies it so much. And Walter Brueggemann, who's one of my favorite theologians, says you really should not oversimplify what is actually being said in the book of Ecclesiastes. He says, these are not the reflections of a person who is looking back, seeing all of the decisions that they made, and just kind of chalking up all of the regrets that they have. He says, that's not what this is. Says, this is not a reflection of someone who says, all of the cities I built, all of the social programs I built, all of the warehouses I built, all of the militaries I built. It's not a reflection of him saying they're fundamentally bad. He says, they've just changed me. And they have changed me in ways that make it extremely difficult for me to go back to who I once was. See, Solomon was called, literally called, and put in place to be a prophetic leader of a prophetic people. He was called to lead people so that they could model for the world a fundamentally different way of interacting with the world and people who are on the outside. He was called to do that. That was his fundamental core identity and task and job. And Solomon is saying, the houses weren't wrong. The militaries weren't wrong. The forests and the gardens, they weren't wrong, but they changed me. And they have created this kind of lens that is so cluttered that if I wanted to go back to being that prophetic leader, I don't even know how I would get there. I cannot imagine what it would be like to lead that group of people. Walter Brueggemann says that Solomon is lamenting that his prophetic imagination has been wiped away by all of the comforts and securities that he built. And not in a shaming way, but in a way that there is a real sense that he lost something core and fundamental to who he was. That he had so much trouble figuring out how to recover it. I think Jesus is picking up on this in the passage. Jesus is not saying, don't store your money or be wise or make good investments. He's not saying that at all. But he is saying, you know that you can be consumed over and over and over again. You just can. And it has the potential of moving you to a place where it will be extremely hard to recover that core and fundamental identity. You will start to have things and be positioned in the world in such a way that the things you could never imagine having had, you will never be able to remember or think about a way that you couldn't live without them. When I lived on $19,000, I thought if I had $10,000 more, I could buy Los Angeles. I mean, I thought I could do anything. Man, I now have my life, and it's not bad. But boy, is my definition of what I need and what is possible different? Yes. fundamentally different. And can I imagine any way of recovering that type of beautiful idealism, that sort of prophetic imagination that I had when I was in Los Angeles? I don't know how to get back there. I really don't. That's my confession. This is complex. I think Jesus is warning, just be careful, be wise. These things are not static. They can change you, and they will. Just be aware. So what do you do about that? 3 points. I'd go after your village elders. Who here has a lot more experience than you that you can look at and say, I need some advice, where you can level set? That's the beauty of having a church community, of people coming together, where you can actually say, look, I have life to live, and I am walking down a road. Can you, from your wisdom, just give me some sense of where this is headed? It's amazing when I talk to someone who's 26 and they're telling me about all of the things that they want to do, and I'm 41, not that much further. I'm like, that's the stupidest idea I've ever heard. I know where it is headed, and you're not in love. Trust me. Trust me. This is an opportunity for you to come together, to sit with someone and say, tell me, how have you managed wealth? What are the places and ways that you lost and missed out? What are parts of yourself that you gave up that you wish you hadn't? What are those prophetic parts of yourself that you wish you could get back? And where do you think you lost it? And learn from the village elders here. Trust me, that is one of the beauties of community. The second thing I think is rhythms. I grew up in an evangelical church and we had like no rhythms. It was just like celebration every day. That's all we did. Celebration, altar calls, and, you know, huge youth groups. Like, that's what we did. But you're in a season where there is a rhythm, and that whole rhythm, the calendar, the rhythm, this whole Lenten season is about saying, enter into a space where you practice discomfort. Because you live a life where you avoid discomfort at all cost. And if you have a life where you avoid discomfort, you stop being able to have as much clarity around things. So I would encourage you to press in, to be at the Lent service. Like, own these seasons as ways to like actually moor you in a tradition that is attempting to reset some of these habitual things that end up changing people in very negative ways. These practices and these rhythms, they matter. They really, really matter. And the third thing is, expose yourself to things that are fundamentally different. I was having a conversation in forum today, and they're like, someone was asking me, like, how do I relate? What do I do? And it's like, these are the greatest questions. Yes, you should find yourself regularly in a space where you are in contact with people who are challenging what you understand about the world and how the world works and what being human actually is, because in that space, they can reignite and reset the things that you think are formed and consistent and constant. I was talking about mental illness and how difficult it is. It's so difficult, but when you interact with people with mental illness, you can't but not look at the world fundamentally differently. It will have to change you. You cannot walk away the same. I believe I have 3 points this time. I had 2 last time. Amen? Amen.